Dave Moore on Today FM podcast.
Good morning, Alan Fletcher.
How are you, Dave? Lovely to speak to you.
And you too. I am a massive Manchester United fan, and I know you're a Liverpool fan, so straight away we're off on the wrong foot.
So, Dave, it's been lovely to chat to you, mate. I'm sure we'll catch up.
I hear you. I do have to park my fandom every now and again when I talk to somebody like yourself. But listen, how are you feeling about Jurgen departing?
Oh, I have to say that you can't... Everyone feels such enormous affection for Jurgen. And, I mean, he's been remarkable. And you couldn't pick a more inspiring manager. But there've been some great ones. I mean, there's a bloke called Alex Ferguson who did pretty well for some team in the Midlands there for a while.
Yeah, you're probably right. You know. And tell me, how did you become a Liverpool fan? I mean, obviously, we hear these stories sometimes that, you know, it's just... for me, for example, Manchester United was just picking up a school bag when I was 4 years old. But what about you?
Well, for me, it was. I mean, I love the round ball game. I always have, you know, because, of course, we have the Aussie rules football here, which is a bit more like the Gaelic. I think it was when the Aussies started playing for Liverpool, Craig Johnston,
yes,
Harry Kewell and so forth. They were, you know, that drew your interest. But my love for Liverpool kind of stems more from my love for Liverpudlian and Merseyside music back in the 60s. You know, so, I mean, Liverpool had a kind of an ethos in my mind all the time as that kind of wonderful working class city that was part Irish, I have to say, of course.
Very much so.
I always thought the North had such a charm. And when I started going to the UK and doing a lot of pantomime and things as well, you know, it just cemented that for me. I always got to see a game in Liverpool, always went up there. And I kind of feel home when I'm there. It's really, really wonderful place.
Yeah, no, and you said a lot of Irish feel the same way. Well, look, you've mentioned the music, and that is what we want to talk about. You're coming to play in Nall in County Dublin, the Seamus Ennis Arts Centre, which is a great venue, by the way. You're coming there. But talk to me about this music thing. Like, how far back does this musical influence and interest and you know, this, you know, idea of performing, does it come before acting or is it after acting?
It coincided really, because I'm more of an entertainer, I suppose, really. And as an actor, you're always doing music. I used to sing swing concerts. I used to do musicals as an actor. But when I met up with some rock musicians back in 2004 and formed a band, Waiting Room, which played it all the neighbours' nights we had here in Melbourne.
Yeah.
It took off like a rocket and became very popular in the UK. We never got to Dublin or anywhere in the south. We did play Belfast twice up there at the Queen's University and had huge sellouts. And, you know, we did 10 tours of the UK. It was massively popular. But I drifted by desire, because I've always loved country music, I've always loved Americana folk music, and I've loved Celtic music as well. And so I drifted into that genre back in about 2019 and started to record and write my songs and record my songs in that genre. And I'm now in the place where I feel like I'm really truly home as a musician. I'm surrounded by great musicians. I've got a fantastic band. And yes, it's a joy to be writing music and performing it now to an audience. I think that really a lot of people who like my music are kind of 25 and older, and they like that folk Americana music and country, which is huge now. Of course, country is massive.
Absolutely.
And they support my shows so strongly. It's just an absolute pleasure to do them.
Yeah, judging by the list of tour dates in front of me, they certainly do that. But let's have a listen. This is a song called The Point, which is your album title track. And this is, to anybody who hasn't heard Alan perform it, listen to this.
For what is the point of getting on your knees and praying to someone you can never please? What is the point of trying to get forgiveness from someone you ain't even met?
It's so good, Alan. It really is. And do you think there's this music exists in an Australian world? You know what I mean? I mean, obviously, you mentioned Americana, and country music has its you know, its roots in so many places, but obviously America is where it's huge. But is there an Australian angle to what you do, or are you more influenced by the American stuff?
Which is a really interesting question, you know, because there is a real Nashville country sound. It's really dominant. And a lot of musicians here in Australia emulate that. But what I actually tend to emulate more is more of a folk kind of, I suppose, Celtic feel.
Yeah.
And in Australia, country music is huge here, by the way, absolutely huge. And Australian country music has its very distinct differences from the American music. It's a lot raw, more raw. It's probably perhaps a little more less cliched, I'd like to say. And when I write in this genre, I do write a lot of comedy songs, by the way, as well as deep feeling songs like The Point.
You know, we're going to get onto that. Don't you worry.
Brilliant. But country's very, very strong in Australia. But Americana's more strong in the capital cities, perhaps, whereas country's more of a regional thing. So, but it's the fastest growing genre of music. I don't know about Ireland, but certainly in the UK, it is now the fastest growing genre of music. And the shows are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and more American stars are heading to the UK and recognizing it as a fantastic market.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, I know so many people in the inverted commas, young people category, those younger than I am that work with me. And most of them are huge country music fans. And obviously Beyonce doing crossover albums, you know, pushes that that kind of bracket wider and it encompasses more things and people are exposed to it in ways that they haven't been before. And listen, the more the merrier, I say, let's bring it on. But I do want to ask you about some of the songs you've written, because there's one which channels your Dr. Carl Kennedy personality, which is called I've Got a Crush on Susie K, which people will know, of course, as Susan Kennedy. And everyone, you have to listen to this, guys.
Hurry home from school every afternoon. Switch the telly on and get ready to swoon. The supermom of Ramsey Street, she's so hot. When Sue is in an episode, it doesn't need a plot in an ideal world. Oh, she would be my girl. I've got a crush on Susie K. She wouldn't give me the time of day. Like a disease without a remedy. I've got a crush on Susie Kennedy.
It's so good, Alan. And like written, obviously not from the point of view of Dr. Carl Kennedy.
No, look, this one's got a bit of a history. We actually wrote it, a mate of mine and I wrote it, for a comedy show that he was doing way back years ago. And when we did the celebration tour around the UK last year, I used that song as a way of introducing Susan Kennedy, Jackie Woodburn, to the stage for her interview.
Yes.
And people loved it so much. And they said, oh, please, please, please record it. So I thought, well, you know, having sung it so many times on stage live, I thought, well, I might as well record it and pop it out there. And the thing I would say, Dave, is that I never shy away from the fact that, you know, Neighbours has given me a name, has given me so much, given me a wonderful job for all these years. And it's where a lot of my fan base is. And I respect Neighbours so much that I'm not the sort of person who sit back and say, oh, your Neighbours is something else I do.
Sure.
Neighbours is very much a part of me, and I'm a part of Neighbours, and I accept that. And so when people come to my gigs, you know, I don't
you don't shy away from it.
I never would do that, no.
Alan, we're at a situation now where Neighbours has been reinvented, and we were all so happy to hear that was happening after the crushing news that it was coming to an end after more than 9,000 episodes. But how did it feel for you guys?
Well, I mean, you know, when it ended, we were obviously gutted for ourselves and for the crew, because there's 200 people lost the job when that show ended. But it was the outpouring of grief from the fans that was really, really the hardest thing to deal with. I mean, I'd been on that show. I'd been on the show for 29 years. I'd had a wonderful run. You know, in the acting business, you're a rooster one day and a feather duster the next. So you don't really think much about something coming to an end. But the fans were so devastated. And then I did my Dr. Carl tour after that, and the grief was palpable. And then it was like watching a TV show or the perfect movie. The fans swelled up so strongly in opposition to the show ending that Amazon just said, oh, this is nuts. We'll have to pick it up. Yeah. So really, the fans saved Neighbours. There's no question. Amazon say that. They say the fans saved Neighbours. So now we're actually making a show which we can honestly say is being made for a very specific bunch of people, those people who die hard, people who love Neighbours.
Yeah, isn't that amazing that the power of the fans? I mean, it happened, I think, if memory serves me rightly, in a way with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which was a network show that was dropped and then went to a streamer then on, you know, in the US. But it just goes to show that if the fans of something are vocal enough and are passionate enough and move with their feet and then their dollars, you know, all of a sudden the companies sit up and they take notice and they go, no, hang on, there's a very hungry, specific audience for this. Let's feed them.
Absolutely. And the one thing, Neighbours is a hallmark of Neighbours, and I think it's why it's lasted almost 40 years next year, is that Neighbours listens to its fans as well. So a lot of our stories and a lot of the way the show is slanted is actually directly aimed at the feedback the fans give through social media and letters and so forth and emails. So we are linked to the fans very, very strongly in a way that many shows aren't.
True. No, very true. And you can feel that. I mean, look, even the fact that when the new version of the show came about, I mean, you had yourself in there. Obviously, Jackie was in, Stephen Dennis, Guy Pearce, Ian Smith. I mean, I spoke to Tim Kano and Rebecca Almaloglu when it first came back, and they just talked about, you know, how excited they were that so many of the previous iterations cast were more than happy to come across and excited about coming across.
I'll tell you, you wouldn't say no. I mean, you jump at it because you know that if people want to see you and you've had such this wonderful relationship for so many years, it's nuts to give that away. It's a unique thing in an actor's life. But how interesting, though, Dave, the one thing I love about the new Neighbours is that they were able to bring in a whole bunch of people, new people, that the audience have fallen in love with very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And it looks better than it ever has because they spend
so much
on it.
Yes. No, really, like you can tell the Amazon production values are in there, which is absolutely brilliant. Listen, before I go, I need to do my quick fire round to do with all my guests, Alan. So
yep.
Just four quick questions for you. And number one is, what are you currently obsessed with?
Oh, I'm currently obsessed probably with the TV show Hacks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love that show, and it's just come back for a second season. So I make sure that every Friday when it drops, a new episode drops, my wife and I cuddle up on the couch to have a look at that.
Brilliant. Who is the most famous person in your phone?
Oh, this is a good question.
Yeah, 39 years now in the business. You're going to give me some great name.
You know, this is not going to mean a lot to you, but the most famous person in my phone is Max Rushton, the legendary football commentator.
Yes. I love Max Rushton. That's a great shout. Okay. Think back to when you were about 8 years old and you were in school and you had a lunchbox, I'm assuming. What was in Alan Fletcher's lunchbox?
My favorite lunch of all time, which even my mother frowned upon, but she made for me. And we used to have a one of those manufactured meats in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
called polony. Basically, it was something masquerading as meat with
right.
Absolutely no health value,
no nutritional values stated.
No, and Dave, my polony, which was that came in a round roll, was sliced up and placed between two slices of white bread, smothered in tomato sauce, and that was the perfect lunch.
Delicious. And the final question I ask everybody, and I know it's a bit weird, but I don't. So I like to know whether or not my guests wash their legs in the shower.
No, I know. I don't know.
Yes, Alan Fletcher.
No, I wash my hair in the shower and everything else gets washed as the suds wash down me.
Well, listen, Alan, you are coming to do a huge UK and Ireland tour. The Irish bit of it is the 14th of July, the Seamus Ennis Arts Centre in Nall in County Dublin. We can't wait to have you over in Ireland and performing. Thank you so much for taking the time and working out time zones and everything and chatting to me today. I really appreciate it.
Brilliant talking to you. Loved every minute. Bye.
Dave Moore on Today FM Podcast.